Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 thrillers of the 21st century.
Damn right. Let's go, Paulie. Welcome to episode 440 of the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down stuff in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. Not just movies, not just television, but today, yeah, movies.
Yeah.
Because we thought, why not?
Thrillers, right?
Thrillers, 21st century. We've kind of entered into this realm now of, oh, we're doing some stuff from the 20th century. We're doing some stuff from the 21st century. That's obviously, right. This side of the divide is a lot smaller in scope.
Yeah, fewer years and so on.
Just the 21 completed years, given that there's this whole penchant for 2000 not counting towards the 21st
century. 2001 onwards, yes.
Yep,
So
21 thrillers. And a half years. So it could be a film we watched last week. That counts.
Could be. Is there any recent ones for you, Paul?
There are recent ones, but nothing like nothing in the 2020s, if I can put it that
there
way.
There you go. So yeah, it's hard to do that. Thrillers themselves, though,
a movie has to be broad.
Yes, because sometimes you've got spy thrillers, you've got some other thrillers. Some thrillers can be a drama if you like. I don't know, but
if there's enough thrilling stuff in there,
so literally it needs to thrill you, stuff, right?
Yeah, it needs to be. Yeah, I think it's anxiety and really like on edge of your seat is the way I kind of went at it. And so one of mine, even a couple of mine, might be very close to horror thrillers.
Of course.
Right, as you would expect. And then others are much more along the lines of dramatic thrillers or... Yeah, I've got a spy thriller for sure in my list.
Well, during my my research, I'm looking at people doing these very, this is a thriller, this is one of the best
very
thrillers.
Broad.
It's like, that's not a fucking thriller. That's a drama.
Did you have an example?
Brick. Remember that Rian Johnson
Brick's
movie?
Definitely a thriller.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hardball detective penchant.
Is it?
I would classify
it. Very, okay. Well, that's not what I meant.
Noir. It's a noir film. Noir is a typical thriller.
But it's not, is it? Yeah. See, it wasn't that thrilling. It was just interesting, I found. But hey. Okay.
I had like 10 honorable mentions. I found this really tough. But I do want to say now, about a year or more ago, about 15 months ago, we did the top 10 thrillers of the noughties alone. So 2001, 2010.
We did indeed.
Maybe 2000, 2009, whatever it was we decided on that time. Now, some of my films from that list, but I've made a real effort to shop out a bunch of things. So, for example, with apologies to the Nolan stands out there, there's no Inception on mine.
No Inception on mine either, just because we talk about it all the time.
Talk about it all the time. That said, now, maybe my number one probably also should have been shopped out because I'm pretty sure we mentioned on that episode, but I've made a real effort to throw in some films which, in at least 1, 2, 3 cases, probably never mentioned before, and a couple other cases, only a couple of times mentioned on the show.
Much the
very, same very rarely. And then a couple of stalwarts, but maybe in different positions than you might expect. So there I'm hoping this will be a little bit of a surprise. This one won't be as predictable as it might be when you consider if you listen to the show for a long time. Wonderful. It's fantastic to have you here. If you're new to the show, this is all brand new and you've come on board just to hear what we think are the best thrillers of the 21st century. We're sorry that we missed out Inception.
That's right.
For example, and maybe a couple
but
others.
But understand that we know that's the best thing ever.
Yeah, it would absolutely be number one, I think, on both of our lists.
Totally.
If we were including it. So there you go. That's the preamble. Let's get into it, Wayne, on the other side of a segment which kicks off most every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The Recount's our mailroom. Paul, what's up?
Well, the vote from last week's episode or episode 438, sure. Basically, at the time of recording last week's episode, this was our top 10 bands of all time.
Bands, got it.
As we asked, who would rock everyone's socks off? Now, you may recall, there was a very, very sad moment in the episode where I think the entire world empathized with just how tough this whole podcasting / counting down gig can be, where I did forget to include Muse.
What? Yes.
No.
And somehow I didn't pick it up when you're hearing it alone. I was like, yeah, I just assumed you'd have it in there.
Yeah, very, very poor form for me. And I think I actively spruced you and said, just vote for Wayne because I don't deserve to win. And Wayne, you did win, but not by as much as you might imagine. 26 votes to you, 21 to me.
Always a surprise when I win a music
Well,
one.
I think you've won like 4 in a row now. So the pendulum
one,
has absolutely...
Not a music one.
That's the second music one you've
Is
won.
It?
Yeah, so okay. Enough of that. This crap of playing the underdog. Fucking annoying.
We'll see.
The Pint, John from that show. Wonderful show. Do check out The Pint. And John's also a patron of the show. Thank you, John, for your support. Faith No More equals automatic Paul vote.
There you go. A lot of people out there.
Chad Fackler said, look, I know I'm an old fart, so I can respect the list Paul put up, but I agree a lot with a lot more of Wayne's picks. Sorry, Paul. That's all right, Chad. That's all right. I did encourage people to vote for Wayne. A la Troy Spinner, the man who puts the list up every list, he said, thought Wayne was about to give us the worst list since Action Comedies when he opened with the Beach Boys, but after that it was all class, no ass. Point Wayne.
There you go. Bad time.
Julio from Contrarian said, going to give it to Paul mainly for showing some restraint and not putting fucking Tool at number one. Also, Stone Turbo Pilots are great. Thank you, Julio. That's very kind of you.
Sure.
Grant Lanham said, Wayne's list from the Milk Podcast, by the way, Wayne's list was as edgy and bold as a very round, bland, and not edgy thing.
If you're looking for edgy people, actually, my comedy is, but my music taste is not.
Then perhaps the quote slash comment, I should say, of the week. Kia Crow would have voted for whoever had Muse on their list. So instead, it's a default vote for Wayne.
Oh, she's just trolling. she's trolling you there, Ryan. But thank you, Key.
And then she'll write everybody that my Facebook profile pic is the
Muse Resistance album cover. Album. Exactly.
Which I'm now going to laugh at because I just saw that I added. Thanks, Kia. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone who got back to us with their feedback on that one. Yeah, well done, Wayne. Another win to you. Who will triumph this week as we count down the best thrillers of the noughties? Let's find out on the other side of this music cue.
The top 10 thrillers of the 21st century, yo.
It's the subject of this week's countdown. All right, Wayne, how about I lead us away?
Hit it, son.
This week with my number 10, because it's a doozy that I don't know if I've ever spoken about on the show before, not in terms of adding it to a list.
Okay.
Oh, maybe I did way back for the top 10 most disturbing films of all time. This is Gaspar Noé's Irreversible. Irreversible was a 2002, so just qualifying flick, where
Monica Bellucci
oh, yeah. And her husband in real life, I think, what's his name, Vincent Cassell.
Yes.
And it starts with, okay, this whole film is shot, and I think it's anti-clockwise, but I could be wrong, could be clockwise, because it's going back in time. The camera is swooping around the whole time, and it starts in this club, this multi-level club, and it's swooping down between the levels, all one shot.
Wow.
And it basically culminates at the end of this scene with Vincent Cassell bashing in some dude's head graphically with a fire extinguisher.
Wow.
I think it's fire extinguisher anyway. And then we go back in time to just before that, and it time goes forward to meet that point. And then we go back in time. So the film ends on this really happy note where he and Monica Bellucci are swanning about in the park and having a great time as the camera swirls up into the air. Because again,
but of course that's in the past.
That's in the past. And the most present moment is Vincent Cassell smashing this dude's head. And as it turns out, his wife was brutally raped.
And that's shown, isn't it?
And that's shown in absolutely... This is a disturbing as fuck film, and I'm not recommending to anyone who's in the slightest way squeamish. It comes with...
That's why I haven't seen it.
Every trigger warning that could be known to humankind. Gaspar Noé is a very, very controversial filmmaker. He's done some amazing shit, if you can stomach his stuff, including another great film from a couple of years ago called Climax, which could almost make this list, actually.
Yeah.
It's also very, very good, but I won't get into that one here. It is... Yeah, it's really powerful, it's really haunting, and it's really disturbing, and that's why Irreversible was my number 10.
I've thought about it many times, and I just don't think I can.
I mean, this is not a feel-good film. You watch this film to have a good time, you watch it to...
No, but even so, it's like...
You're taken
like,
on a journey
like,
about...
I don't want that moment, like, yeah. You know, so it's like, yeah,
it is
that.
Awful. It is inarguably the most graphic rape scene that I've ever seen, you know, in a modern-day film. It's really hard to sit there and watch, and you do feel like you need to have... At least a shower, probably scrub yourself on natural springs somewhere after watching this.
I'm out. But good choice. I'm sure a lot of people agree with you. By complete contrast, my number 10 is a total like guilty pleasure of mine, and I've watched this film lots of times, and I can tell you the reasons I love it. It's Limitless. Do you remember Limitless with Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro?
Robert De Niro, yeah, I do. They made a series, I think, out of it.
They did make a series out of it. And Bradley Cooper actually, I think, started in that series. Like, he actually was in the first episode or something. But this film is about this dude named Eddie, Bradley Cooper, his adventures after his ex-brother-in-law gives him a pill that suddenly puts his entire brain, like, online and, like, absolutely, like, smashes it. And all of a sudden, he's, like, crazy, accesses all of his brain kind of shit. He finishes his novel at typing speed, at light speed. He wins at poker. He invests in the market, runs it up to millions, fascinates women more. Like, I mean, he's Bradley Cooper, so how much does he have to do there? Yeah, I don't know what that's about. But this is easily the best of the... drugs give you superpowers movies, I reckon.
Wait, is there an ouvoir where there's a lot of this going on?
You know, ever since Roger Ramjet and all those sorts of things, where there was proton
pills. You just create a subgenre of film on the basis of a TV show called Roger Ramjet and Limitless.
Well, there's always some like this thing gave me a power, but it was a drug kind of shit. I can't think of any further.
The Boys.
The what?
The Boys.
Oh, there you are. All right. See, all right, so
they're not really a film subgenre, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, neither was Roger Ramjet, so we're grabbing at straws here, people. But I think what I like so much about this film is that this is kind of as a messy man myself, this gave me a little moment. Okay,
all right.
As soon as Bradley Cooper, the way they shoot the film is, it's all sort of done in this very danky lighting. He's all fucked up, and he's for Bradley Cooper unattractive because he doesn't shave and whatever, right?
Whoa!
I mean, he's still faced from the 18, but like the. And then when he takes the
pill,
that's
a slave to fame.
I mean, I think so. It's certainly not, you know, whatever.
How about Alias? How about A Star Is Born?
A Star Is Born is probably going to get there for you with all the Academy Award winning it did. But yeah. But when he takes the pill, what they do is they just turn up the brightness on the frame. All of a sudden, everything's bright, and it's like, and you feel that all the way through the movie, and it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool.
It's a nice visual nod to what's happened.
Very much so. But then the first thing he does when he has an optimal brain is he cleans his apartment. And I'm like, yeah, because you probably need order in order to function well, which is something that, I don't know, Paul, you're a neat man. I'm not fucking like, I often find that when my house is clean, the 4 or 5 times a year it happens.
Yeah, I'm not that neat anymore. I'd like to be neater, but it's really hard to live with other people who aren't that neat either. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, when we were kids, Paul was the neatest motherfucker I ever met. I go to his house, his shit was tight, son. Don't even worry about
That's because I grew up with an OCD mum, so.
But the point is, your ass is neat, right? Word, right?
Yeah.
I was impressed. I was sitting there, this motherfucker's like general.
I could be tidier. We could absolutely be tidier.
We could all be tidier, but like, I have kids as a factor and so on and so on. But like, I have no excuse. I live here alone, Paul.
Yeah.
And it always looks like my dick fell out. So it's like.
That's because most nights it does.
Should have seen it coming. But yeah, sorry.
So should have she.
There it is again. But Limitless, I'm a huge fan of this film, and I actually it's a comfort watch for me. It's a total comfort watch.
Fair enough.
There you go.
My number 9, a little bit more palatable / easy to digest. My number 9 is a film which I've championed on this podcast several times over. So this is one I do mention because although Wayne has softened it slightly in the ear of the podcast, initially he fucking hated it. It's one of your absolute favorites, Rai Rai Goz Goz.
Come on, man.
In Nicholas Winding Refn's only good film, Drive.
Okay, here we are. Now, this film was anything but thrilling. It just had some violence happen, and in the rest of the time, he's trying to...
I disagree.
It was so slow.
It builds and builds and builds, and the tension becomes, for me, who really loves this movie, became the last 20, 30 minutes of this movie. I literally was on the edge of my seat trying to... Is he going to make it out? Is he going to save her? What's going to happen here? Who's going to take him down? What's happening to all the other characters? Fuck me. Anyone could die at any moment because that's what happens in this movie.
That and a shit ton of pauses before you speak.
Sure. Sure, there is a lot of contemplative silences in this movie. Yeah, doesn't take away from the tension
to
for me.
To be fair, we in the history of the show, I did shit on this film. Then I saw it again and I relented and said, no, it actually is a good film.
Begrudgingly enjoyed it.
Very begrudgingly, but I've always said that it has the best song in the history of time of movies ever. Real human being, you should totally outro it.
There you go. Good. There's my note. Editor's note.
Intro, outro, whatever.
With that particular one, which is I'm sure every time Drive's ever mentioned on the show, we have gone out on that particular song.
But it's so good.
And what a cast. Gosling, Kerry Mulligan, Bryan Cranston, Albert Brooks, Oscar Isaac, Christina Hendricks, Ron Perlman. That's a cast.
Was Christina Hendricks in it?
She was. Huh. She didn't make it far. Put it that way.
Got it. Yep. Okay, very cool.
Drive from 2011 is my 9th best thriller of the 21st century.
Nice one. My number 9 is a film when I saw it, I was sort of, I wouldn't say I was nonplussed, but I didn't know how to take it. And I was like, how do I feel about this film? And what stood out for me was the performance of the lead character. I have since watched it again maybe a year ago. And I was like, that was actually sheer brilliance. It's Nightcrawler.
Yeah, it's on my honorable mentions list. Yeah.
So Nightcrawler is about...
Largely thanks to... a criminally overlooked Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal is, I swear to God, like this guy is a real actor. Like he is one of those, like he's big on thrillers. I'll say this, there's another J. Jill movie on my list.
Ooh.
Yeah. And
that'd be.
The film itself, he plays this guy named Lou Bloom, and he's a desperate guy. He's really desperate to make it in the world of television crime reporting. So he becomes a nightcrawler, which is a film crew that goes around the streets at night, and whenever he hears a police call that there's some kind of crime, he'll go film that shit, then he'll sell the footage to a news agent, a news-like outlet, and that's how he makes his living. Now, he'll go to any lengths to get to a story before his competitors, and soon ropes in his assistant, who's played by Riz Ahmed, into his like his murky methods, and it becomes basically the Rene Russo, who is an old favorite of ours, is like the chick in the news thing, and they bone anyway. The
operative word old,
yeah, but I'm down with it.
no shit, you are.
She's still all good. Now, what it is that Jake Gyllenhaal in this film, if you look at him, the decisions he's making in every scene to just hold his head a certain way, jerk his like his eyes around and dart. He looks off-centered and he's unsettling every time he's on screen. And it just helps so much because you're sitting there going, you actually feel weird when he's around and you can tell he's fucked up. And you can tell that the shit that he does is like, yeah, this is pretty much what a guy like that would do. And yet he is like, you know, celebrated or whatever in the film. He's a really good actor. Yeah. So I'd say,
agree.
Yeah, Nightcrawler is probably one of... I think we did this one time. It's a really good LA movie because it's set in the night.
Oh, we did do LA movies. Yeah. Nice memory. Well done.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to you. You know what's coming back to me, Wayne?
What?
A film that could be on my list, but it's not.
Go on.
It's called Take Shelter.
Take Shelter. What's Take Shelter about?
Take Shelter. It's also what you should do when you head down to Busselton.
Oh, Brian.
Head on out to the brewery, the Shelter Brewery there, right near the Busselton Jetty.
Nice.
And get yourself a... anything from the Indian Pale Ale through to the Extra Pale Ale, through the Lager, through the Stout, all the rest of it. Some very, very nice beers there. Some brews would recommend as we come up to school holidays. Get on out and check out the Shelter Brewery in Busso. Tom and the crew down there doing a fantastic job and who are, I will say, this is a paid, in terms of beer,
yeah,
advertisement.
A beer sponsorship, yes.
And so I'm speaking from the heart as I literally drink a Shelter. As I take Shelter, no less. Huh?
Well, he's been sucking him down, as befits that joke. So,
it's not my number eight, but what is my number eight?
What is your number eight?
A film which is probably the most recent on my list from 2018. It's directed by Anish Changanti. It's the first of the new wave, and this is a slowly expanding subgenre of films, screen-based films.
Screen? Oh, yes.
It's called Searching. Stars John Cho
as the father
of a 16-year-old girl who goes missing. And basically we're watching it all from his screen. We're following his attempts to find her as he calls this person on Skype and jumps into her Facebook account and her Instagram account, looking through there and piecing together the mystery of what's happened to her as it goes. And it never leaves the screen.
Which is amazing. Was this a COVID movie? It wasn't, was it? Because
no,
it was way
before
over.
2018. Well before. It's really interesting. It's really engaging. And it has one of the best openings to a film ever.
I've seen it, and I remember it. That tells you everything.
We see why. Well, I mean, a father doesn't need a good reason to be close to his daughter, to be caring for her, and the like. I speak as one myself. But the mother, his wife, dies tragically through, and it's all shown through what's on his screen. The screensavers, the photos, the recordings, the videos that he's made of his wife as she succumbs to a terminal illness. And so he's all that his daughter's got left, and she's all that he's got left really as well. And so when she disappears, he is a man obsessed.
Yes.
And he'll do anything to find her. And it's, as opposed to pick up a gun and go to France and shoot people with it, it's, I'm exploring this and investigating. And the twist when it comes, I think, is really well earned and really good. There's a follow-up to this film made by the same team called Missing, and it's a daughter looking for her mother that's gone missing.
Have you seen that one this year?
It's really good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I'd say as good, if not slightly better even, because I didn't see the twist in that one coming, and I should have. So,
you see this? It's such a sign of the times that you've got a film like this now. Obviously, you couldn't even make this probably 15 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, it's like video wasn't as prevalent. The online wasn't as prevalent.
Yep.
This is one of those things. Like, you say, yeah, this is when things were big. It's like when Sandra Bullock did a movie called The Net. It was like, oh, yes. Ooh, what's the fucking net? Does it mean the internet? Ooh, it's like that shit. Now it's like, fuck off. But yes, this is...
hackers of the world,
hackers.
Unite.
Hey, we still like hackers. Zero Cool and shit. Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
There we go. Nice one. Okay.
Okay.
Your
number eight.
Number eight is a film that you might argue is a bit of a horror film. Maybe not.
Look
so,
out.
Not sure.
Look out.
I definitely call it a thriller, but who knows? I remember being wildly impressed with this thing, mainly for the performances, but also just for the show itself. It's Split.
Oh, I thought you were going a different route there.
I know what you're
Split
thinking.
Split also on my list.
Oh, really?
No, honorable mention.
Honorable mention, cool.
Sorry.
So 2016 is The Split. It's got James McAvoy, and I think this is the acting performance of a lifetime, if you ask me, because...
Very good.
He is literally... It's about... James McAvoy is playing this character named Kevin, and he has evidenced 23 personalities to his psychiatrist.
Dissociative identity disorder.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. Okay. So, and through the film, he actually pretty much goes through all of them, and each time it is really convincing. And there's one like sort of uber personality, I guess, which is set to materialize and dominate all the others, called the Horde, and he's compelled to abduct three teenage girls led by Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yep.
And that whole thing where they're trying to access his different personalities to try and get away, or she's trying, you know, with varying degrees of success, is an insanely good-ass film, man. Like, it's really, really good. Of course, at the end, you find this like, oh my God, it's actually a part of the Unbreakable.
It's a closet Unbreakable sequel.
Yes, which is just the bomb. So I was like, I remember, it's M. Night. Right?
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan. Is this the last good thing he did? Yes, last good thing he did. I think it is.
Well, then we get Ass after this.
Ass was shit, so Glass was crap.
And we got the one about old, when they're on the beach and getting older. That was.
What did you think of that? I actually didn't mind.
We didn't do it for the show, did we? We just talked about it on Top 10 Last 10 at some point.
No, but it wasn't bad.
And then we had Knock at the Cabin this year, which was okay.
Yeah, that was actually okay too.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I think thankfully he's passed the worst of it. I did not like Old at all. But I'll tell you the one that stunk up everything was the follow-up to this Glass.
Glass.
Glass was terrible.
Is Glass worse than The Happening?
Yes. No. No, it's not. Because okay. The Happening is just misfiring. The Happening is a disaster of a film with a great idea, which was just executed so, so stupidly.
Mm. Yeah, no, we do that. But like Split, here's the thing about Split. Like, you don't even have to know the Unbreakable stuff, but you see it. Because I didn't know it was part of that, and it made it an amazing film. And then this stinger at the end, like, oh! There's David Dunn, you know? Yeah, so
arguably, that's the way to do that kind of thing. That it doesn't matter whether you got the connection or not. You'd have been scratching your head wondering what the fuck was what if you hadn't seen Unbreakable and didn't make that instant connection.
Yeah, but the idea
but you would have gone, oh, Bruce Willis might be in the next
Bruce
one.
Bruce Willis, exactly. Mm. So that's why it was cool.
Back then, of course.
Nice. That was my number eight, Split.
My number seven broke the mold in 2019, I think it was.
Oh, yeah?
When it came out. Broke the mold because not only did it slam into everyone's radars in a big, big way, it became the first international film to win the Best Picture at the Academy Awards. I'm talking Parasite.
Oh, of
directed
course.
By Bong Joon-ho. The only reason Parasite is down at seven is because it absolutely is a thriller at times, particularly in the last 45 minutes of the movie. But it's also spent a lot of time being kind of a very black comedy and very much a family drama.
See, to me, that's a drama. But I know it's known to be a thriller.
Yeah, if I go to, what's the first thing it says? It says comedy, drama, thriller, and it popped up on all these lists.
Comedy?
It is. It's a real black comedy in places.
Okay.
Yeah, this particular one. I wouldn't say it's the first thing it is. I would absolutely have it as the first half of drama, second half of thriller for me.
Yeah.
And so is there enough time? Yeah, I thought this fit the list. And it just broke everyone's mind how good film could be. And I'm so glad this came along. And look, obviously Bong Joon-ho is a celebrated filmmaker, but I'm glad that now he... open, not just the academies, but maybe the average cinema goer. Like, I've been championing, not to say I'm ahead of the curve, but I've been championing films out of Korea in particular, but, you know.
This is actually one of those...
For a long time.
Yeah, this is an example of one of the films which I call a Crouching Tiger moment.
Yeah, well, that's actually a really good point. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon did it in the late 1999.
Yeah, well, 2000. You actually convinced me to go see that before any of the hype. No one knew what it was. No one knew who fucking... Maybe people knew who Ang Lee was, but whatever, right? We just went to see it, and I was like, oh, look at this. It's wire work. It's a romance. It's
it stars international action star Chow Yun-fat.
Right? But this, Parasite by Bong Joon-ho, Paul also brought to my attention before any of the Academy Award chatter or any of that stuff. And he's like, you got to check this out. And we saw it. I was like, oh, my God, look at this. And then it became like this huge thing. And it was like, that was the year that Hollywood so Asian, man. Like,
well,
was just,
yeah. And it's paved the way now for, I think, a much broader mindset, not just in the Academy and the like, but I think for the average cinema goer.
Because Bong Joon-ho won the Best Director? I think it won.
I don't have it in front of me. I think it won pretty much everything that year.
Yeah, it nailed it. And ironically, I've had a bong with a hoe in June. Okay, we do that joke every time. Never mind. All right, so...
Do we? I obviously wipe it from my fucking memory.
Maybe it's in my head that I do it every time. Glad we got it out there. Maybe other people may not be.
Yeah, basically it follows a very low-class family in terms of socioeconomically. They just don't have money and the like. They're living not a particularly healthy lifestyle. And they as parasites, here's where the title comes from. Well, there's a number of different ways of reading it, but they ingratiate themselves a very rich and wealthy family one at a time. So the daughter becomes a tutor and the dad becomes the chauffeur and the mum becomes sort of the head cleaner of the house, and over how they kind of become embroiled in this family's life. And then this huge middle of the film twist happens and you realize they're not the only parasites. That's and right. things go south from there. I think this film grows in my estimation the further I move away from it, and I think it's something that you can watch every couple of years. Unlike a lot of films that win the Academy Award, you watch it once and go, I appreciate that film, glad I'll never watch it again.
Do you think that this film suffers from the same Korean thing of it being too long?
It's 133 minutes, so by Korean standards, it's pretty short.
Yeah. So that's the
but
only
it could
thing.
It could be. Look, to my mind, every Academy Award winning film is too long. When's the last time you saw a 95-minute film win the Academy Award?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure there's an example in there, probably The Artiste. I can't remember how long that one was, but anyway.
The ending pissed a few people off.
I like the ending.
Yeah, it surprised me. I was like, what the fuck? You know, but you know, it's if you've seen it, folks, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you probably should see it.
You absolutely should. If I don't think we've given too much away in what we've described here today. It's not that old. And so actually that is the newest film on the list. I take it back. Searching 2018. Parasite 2019 is my number 7.
Nice. My number 7 is a film that I did not expect to like, and I got to it very, very late after people told me to watch it. It was Ben Affleck's first tryout of just making a film, and it's called Gone Baby Gone.
Oh.
Yeah, The Town came later on.
Oh, he directed that second. Okay.
And I do love The Town. Mm. And is it on my list? I can't remember if I took it out or not. I did. It's actually later up on my list. Okay. But this one, there you go. It's a little Affleck fest here. But Gone Baby Gone has Morgan Freeman and then Ed Harris and then Casey Affleck and Michelle Monaghan. And that's kind of really why I watched it. Now.
You like Casey Affleck that much?
Yes, I do. But actually, to speak of, the plot is that there's this four-year-old that disappears from a home and the police make very little headway in solving the case. So the girl's aunt hires two private detectives, which is Casey Affleck.
What
and
year
Michelle
is it
set in? 2007?
What's it set in?
Ooh, I think it was present day, but I could be
wrong. Oh, it was present day, okay. Yeah. Well, it sounded like it was almost like a 30s detective thing there.
No, definitely it's a present day. And the detectives admit that they don't have any experience with this type of case, but then the family wants them for a couple of reasons. One, they're not cops, and two, they know the Boston neighborhood. He's Baston. He's in the neighborhood, right?
Yep.
Now, the show itself, first of all, Casey Affleck, to me, and again, I had never really seen him much before this except for Good Will Hunting or whatever, but he's quite a slight man. He's not particularly whatever, but the performance he gives in this show is absolutely kind of amazing with the like he's actually kind of a badass and it works even though he's much smaller than the other folks.
I think I saw this film once, but I just don't remember anything about it.
Well, what was the big thing about it? The reason I watched it is someone said to me, if you watch this film at the end, it is truly one of the most stark examples of what would you do? What would you do? Because there's a very hard decision to be made at the end of this film about the girl as such, and I won't spoil it, but in my estimation, Casey Affleck made the wrong choice. All right?
Okay.
I would definitely not have did what he did.
I'm about to go on some long plane trips. More on that in a little bit, just to remind people.
Actually, as a father,
I wonder
should watch
if I should crank that one out to watch.
I thought it was a really good. Apart from the fact that the ending is this quandary, it's actually a good show. Like it's, and you can tell why people took notice of Ben Affleck as a director after this. I mean, he cast his brother and everything. There's a lot of reasons for it to go wrong and bad, but it didn't. It was really good. And how do you nail Morgan Freeman in his first movie? Anyway. That was good. Yeah, so Gone Baby Gone, I totally recommend it. And it's worth, well, it's a discussion.
Well, clearly. So
parking lot
list?
Movie.
On your list. All right, very nice. Thank you for that one. My number 6, Wayne, is one you might have shoved off your list, but I'm not normally a champion for this film series, nor this particular era of it, even though I think this is better by far than what came before. I'm talking Casino Royale.
Oh, baby. Absolutely. Because
I talk about it all the time.
I didn't put it on
that's
the list,
fine.
But
so
absolutely,
it would be
bro. Casino Royale is so good, I want to shit my pants.
Whereas I don't. And I ward which one to put on here. This one or Skyfall. Now, it obviously falls off a cliff after that, but those two were really...
Oh, I disagree. But yes.
were really good films. 2006, Martin Campbell, the reboot, which had a lot to do, I think, with Bourne coming in and kind of doing the spy thing that particular way. And they went, we need to straighten up and serious.
It was so the right move to jump away from the campiness.
Yeah, exactly. So rather than having the camp Bond, the over-the-top Bond, let's have a more grounded Bond who has relationships and connections that run through the whole series of films rather than
amazing.
Just almost resetting other than, you know, little cameos of the same Q and M and whatever else in previous iterations, which I really appreciated. And so things that are happening in this film inform the other films in the franchise, what end up being, what, 5 of them. So under the Daniel Craig era. And this is sort of his...
My favorite Bond by far.
His, not his training one, like we get to see how he gets his first kill and we get to, you know, absolutely electrifying, opening, exhilarating
Dude,
action
that
sequence.
Was so good.
And I'm not a Bond fan. I think I've made that pretty clear. But yeah, this one and Skyfall are far and away the best Bond films that have ever been made.
Basically, like, you could argue they're some of the best. They're probably the best spy thrillers ever made. Like, funny thing, I tried to show this to a girlfriend at the time, a new girlfriend who did not like boy movies, as she put it.
Okay.
And I'm like, no, you got to watch this one. And she's like, okay. So I put it on. First thing she says is, 2 hours and 10 minutes. I'm like, hang on, woman, just chill out.
Actually,
right?
2 hours and 24 minutes.
2 hours and 24 minutes. And so we went through it. And at the end of it, I still couldn't convince her. She said, look, it looked beautiful. I'm like, did you not see that whole first scene? How cool was... Anyway, all of that stuff was the shit. But the Casino Royale is so good. Yeah, I don't know. It's never, ever been like... I've seen it so many times.
I'm trying to work out the timelines here, but would this be a girlfriend you went on to spend a long time with?
No, 6 months. She's okay. That vegan, Jenny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, in that case, no wonder that didn't work out. All right, that's my number six, Casino Royale.
Casino Royale, nice one. My number six is Shutter Island, Paul.
Oh, really?
Here's what happened.
I'm not a big fan of this movie.
I understand, okay? Because when I saw it first, right? First of all, it's Martin Scorsese, so it's 8 days long or 138 minutes. So,
not quite as long as Casino Royale.
Really shows what you like, isn't it? Now, here it is, right? Shutter Island, initially, I also didn't really care for it. I was like, eh. And the reason I didn't care for it is because it was so fucking harrowing.
I didn't care for it because I picked it so early on it was frightening.
And I did not. Now, Paul was, I believe you were sitting next to me. And when Mark Ruffalo drops his gun at the beginning, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, yeah. I didn't pick up any of that shit. So when it went to the end.
It wasn't just that gun moment. There was another moment where he pauses as if he's trying to remember a line. And that's very deliberately put in there. I'm like, this whole thing's an act. This is something. And so at that point, I was onto it, not that I got the exact details of it, but I knew that this wasn't real.
Well, this is the thing. I didn't pick any of that, but I was just like, what happens in the reveal of what Leonardo DiCaprio's character is going through and what happened to him and his wife and this and all. It was so, that scene itself just tore me to pieces, and I don't have kids. And I was like, oh my God, how would you even deal with that? Of course he's insane.
You wouldn't.
Right?
Yeah.
The reveal that happens later on, though, towards what I liked about it, I actually went to see it again, even though it was like a long-ass movie, not as long as Casino Royale, is that just watching the little clues in there, I actually can't believe it's a Martin Scorsese movie. It actually doesn't feel like one to me. It doesn't. It feels like I don't know what it feels like, but it doesn't feel
like
one.
It feels more mainstream.
Very much so. And what the way that it ends and the thing that it shows you and the big reveal at the end, right? There's argument as to whether Leonardo DiCaprio actually is as he appears to be, which is still no longer cured, shall we say, or that he is cured, realizes that he has done what he's done, can't live with it, and is faking still being in that headspace in order to get lobotomized because that's what he wants done to himself. Very like, holy shit. And I didn't think about it until like years and someone brought it up saying, hang on,
who wrote this book that this was based on? Is it Dennis Lehane or something like that?
Yes, it was.
Did he write Gone... Baby Gone?
Yeah, Lehane. It is Lehane. And he wrote, I don't know what else he wrote, but he wrote, the idea, apparently the book was a clear like metaphor for the US foreign wars after 9/11, but Scorsese's adaptation sort of kind of makes it more personal, as though kind of the director is kind of excavating his own painful regrets and guilt. That's why it was kind of interesting to me. But this is one of those things where it's like, it's a really difficult watch in places, but I think I kind of like the cleverness of it. Obviously not clever enough to fool Paul, but like, yeah, it's sort of in terms of thriller, it's like I didn't know what the fuck was going on half the time and I still watched, and that's why it was my jam.
He wrote Gone Baby Gone.
He did, well. Did he?
Yeah. There's look a probably pulled out the back of my brain.
Well done, somewhere. Old man. Nice one.
Yeah.
So yes, Shutter Island, my number six.
Not my favorite film, but I know people love it because it's Scorsese and it's DiCaprio. And look, it is an interesting film in the way it's all put together.
Totally, so totally.
Do understand where you're coming from with that one. My number five, by contrast, is very different and is a whole 38 minutes shorter than Shutter Island and 44 minutes shorter than Casino Royale.
Well, that's the important thing.
It's called The Guest. It's directed by Adam Wingard. This is one of those ones that straddles the line between horror and thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically follows a soldier played by Dan Stevens, who you won't know, Wayne, but listeners will know from things like, you know, Downton Abbey and shit like that.
Okay.
And he is a returning soldier who introduced himself to the Pisan family, saying he was a friend of their son who was killed in action. And he ingratiates himself into the family, becoming, you know, friendly with the dad and kind of like this protector of the younger sister, who's like a 17, 18-year-old girl. And then there's another sibling as well. And then basically people that wrong the family start dying.
Oh.
And as the film progresses, this guy becomes more and more unhinged. And we do learn that he is the guy that's murdering people.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know what's coming, he's going to turn his attention on the family.
Really?
And so it gets to this, it really builds well. It's a really simple film, really well put together, very small budget. I think, you know, I'd be surprised there's more than 10, 12 million attached. This one of those mid-studio films you don't hear a lot of these days, but they really use it well. And Dan Stevens is really excellent. I think particularly what made this film work is people had only seen him being in these genteel kind of roles in the Downton Abbeys of the world and whatever else. And here he was playing effectively a
killer.
Initially this kind of anti-hero that eventually transitions into being a straight-out villain. So it almost becomes a slasher film in the last 30, 40 minutes.
There's the pull.
Yep. And it really is tense when the sister and the little brother are on the run trying to survive his attention, shall I say.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So The Guest.
Really fun, great film. 2014, well worth a look if you've missed it. And I think many people did. It's very, very sort of under the radar, culty kind of film.
Nice one.
Even though that implies the film's bad and it's not. It's a well-made film.
Okay. No, cool. Number five is where I put The Town.
Okay, so.
But let me tell you,
Ben Affleck, one, two.
A punch, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so here's the thing, though, about The Town, right? First of all, I think Jeremy Renner is really underrated, and I hope he gets better. Because, like, he's fucking great, right?
I'm resisting everything in my soul to make another under-something joke.
Oh, you're an asshole. Jeremy Renner is an excellent actor.
Sorry, Chris.
No, seriously though, he makes this film, all right? And something about The Town, by the way, it's about a proficient group of thieves, bank robbers in Boston, rob a bank and they hold this the assistant manager hostage, Claire, and things get complicated when Ben Affleck puts a load in her. Now, if you have... it's basically the plot.
Okay.
But it's... And look, I'm a bit of a Renner simp, no doubt, all right? But...
Clearly.
But he
you and Chris Yeaney.
Yeah, something about this film, it's like pure charm. Like, I actually think that the reason Ben Affleck is considered a good director or whatever, because this movie did really, really well, and I think it's one of the best, like, ensemble acting pieces I've seen in years.
Wow.
But it's got kind of everything. It's got the action and the suspense of whatever, of a bank robbery, plus you're seeing the characters and their back lives. And what's
another one I remember
here.
Very little about. I should watch
really?
This one again, too.
Really? No, this is great. And I think this is another Dennis Lehan fucking movie.
Wow.
So there you go.
So this is the top 10 Dennis Lehan adaptations.
He did, sorry, Gone Baby Gone was it. I think he wrote this. I think he had something to do with this. Anyway, sorry. That wasn't Dennis Lehan. But this here, every moment in this film, I reckon, is just engaging and interesting. And watching how, they're bank robbers, but Jeremy Renner is obviously crazy and it's his best friend. And then because he's like hooking up with the bank manager of the bank that they fucking robbed, when Jeremy Renner finds out, because this girl just walks out while they're both sitting together, there's just no score, no nothing. And it's just really powerful. And you can see him going, holy shit. And then he starts subtly interrogating her right in front of fucking Ben Affleck. And Ben Affleck's like, what the fuck's he going to do? Really, really good moment.
Tense,
man.
I guess. What
so
you're
good, so
Hence
good.
That's why it's here in your thrillers list.
Yes, The Town is wicked. And I've been looking for a video game about bank robberies ever since this movie came out. Just because I thought it was cool. Not robbing banks.
Thank you.
Not robbing good. Banks, but
the Countdown
idea
podcast
of playing.
Is not endorsed taking
no,
any
No, don't rob any
yours.
Banks, everyone. Don't rob banks, all right? Or anyone.
The views of Wena Resume.
But if you want to hook up with, like, you know, a bank teller, that's cool. She's with it. Go ahead.
There are three mainstays on my list, Wayne. If I move on now to number four, thank you for your number five. This is one of them. I've had Drive. Here's another one that would be on anyone's list of the best thrillers of the 21st century, no doubt. And maybe I should have shopped this one out because we do talk about it. I rewatched it only 2-3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now with That's the wife right. and very close to 5-starring it, if not for a rat that ran across a wall on the very last shot of the film. I'm talking about The Departed.
The Departed?
Yeah.
What's the problem with the rat?
It's stupid. It's on the
fuck
nose.
Off.
It didn't need to be. It's so silly. It screams a momentary lapse of madness in Martin Scorsese's normally clearly brilliant mind.
This is the best movie he maybe ever did. I'm sorry. No. I know Goodfellas. No, I know not, fucking
Goodfellas is instant 5 stars for me. Departed is his second best film.
All right.
Okay. And Goodfellas is based on a book. Obviously, it's not original material, but he's the first person that made a book into a film. This was a film first. Infernal Affairs could also be on this list, to be honest. Very good film.
Great film.
And he's got something he's copying from and then adding Martin Scorsese-ness to it.
But it made it so good. Everyone loved The Departed.
It's amazing. It's the best film of 2006, in my opinion. It's one of the best crime thrillers ever made. It's the basic premise, I'm sure you all know. Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio are both moles for opposite sides of the law. So one is a cop pretending to be a gangster. One's a gangster pretending to be a cop. Jack Nicholson's the mob boss. Martin Sheen is the boss of the police. Mark Wahlberg is one of his lieutenants. And then Alec Baldwin in a memorable cameo, basically.
Alec Baldwin's the best.
Wading in. And then we get a whole bunch of other people too. It's an incredibly stacked cast. It's a wonderful film. It really gets into the mind of these two and what it takes to basically be lying all the time to sustain not just your livelihood, but your life.
Bro, when I saw Jack Nicholson in this, everyone's great, but Jack Nicholson in it, I remember having a moment where I'm like, I can see why he's endured all these years. Mm. Like, he's so good at this shit that he does and the way he delivers lines. And do you remember that How I Met Your Mother has this running joke where they pretend that they're in The Departed and they shit like, are you a co-op? I'm not a co-op! I always thought it was funny.
It is. That's because it is.
No, The Departed is fucking great, man. And absolutely, it was. I think I thought about it more than you. So I thought.
Yeah, look, it's fair. It's fair to say. I think this would be on your list, Wayne, no doubt, along with the Inceptions and whatever the world.
Absolutely.
So don't hold this one against Wayne. It's not on his list. He's have it as an honorable mention.
Totes. Now, my number four, seems like I might be an Affleck simp, Paul, because I love Gone Girl.
Yeah, okay. I did give that some thought, but in the end, didn't even put on my honorable mentions.
So here it is.
I like it. But I think you're more of a Fincher sim.
Have you seen
The Killer trailer yet?
The Killer?
Michael Fassbender?
No, what's this?
Oh, man, you will fucking lose your
mind.
What,
is it a new David Fincher film?
Yeah.
What's it called? The Killer. November. What's it called? What's it about? Do we know what it's about?
Michael Fassbender being a contract killer.
I'm in.
Watch the trailer.
Really?
Yep, you will lose your mind.
Right, oh, my God.
Let's move on from that.
Put it on the list,
obviously. You can wait till after this episode.
All right, good. Shit. All right, good. Gone Girl, ladies and gentlemen. Now, here we have Ben Affleck, but he's not writing or directing. He's simply starring. But he is killing it. And so, Rosamund Pike, who is a big crush of mine, shall we say.
Yeah, I find her, sometimes she's amazing, and other times I find her, like, really not for me.
Okay, so Jack Reacher, she looked amazing. And then in No Time to Die or whatever that Bond was, absolutely.
Yeah,
and then
stunning.
A couple other places, not so much. I know, it's just one of the two-faced. But anyway. I'm sure all of you have heard about this, but it is a total suspense thriller about...
Certainly meets the brief.
Yes, Amazing Amy, and she goes missing, which is Rosamund Pike's character, and Ben Affleck is her husband, and then it becomes a big whole deal where everyone is kind of like, what's going on here? They suspect him of being a killer. Then you find out through the movie that he was banging around on her, and all kinds of weird shit happened. Doogie Howser gets fucked up. It is absolutely like... But what I liked about it probably most of all is that if you look at this film, and there's a lot of videos online about this, but David Fincher does things where he recreates a shot in different, like, so he basically shoots the same shot again and puts it in a different part of the film to remind you of the previous bit and give you a clue as to what's about to happen. And it's really, really clever, like, director cool guy shit, man. And it's so good. And at the end of the film, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, shit, he's fucked now. But he's not quite, it's a really weird thing. It's actually kind of amazing how clever the Amy character is and how she manages to twist and turn and actually make this thing work and just completely fucks over Ben Affleck in its wake. And
yeah, I think, look, this film's almost, it's 9 years old, so we're about to spoil it. If you need it any more than spoiling that. The easy solution would be to have her kill Ben Affleck. But no, her revenge is, I'm going to trap you with me for as long as I want you.
Yes, exactly.
And she tells him for the rest of your life, but whether or not that's the case.
Well, that's it. And now he can't dust her because the whole public knows this crew. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, what? You really did kill her? Oh, my God. They would look at him straight away, you know?
Exactly.
And so, like, she's just got him absolutely by the balls.
Yep.
Like, the only way to get out is to kill himself. So, and, you know, some would say that is marriage. So, when... I'm kidding.
The whole time...
There you go.
This podcast... was waiting to make that joke.
I just thought of it now. But since I'm going to get into so much trouble, I love it.
Vote for Wayne this week is a vote for suicide to survive marriage.
No, it's not. But, you know, it's a vote for like risky jokes. How's that?
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, my number three then is another foreign language film, a film which blew my mind as I worked my way a bunch of years ago for the movie Watching Challenge with Daniel Hendo Henderson from the Movie Journey podcast. The Secret in Their Eyes, which is a Spanish film from 2009, also called El Secreto de sus Ojos.
Oh, sure.
Directed by Juan José Campanella. Stars people you won't recognize unless you're into Spanish cinema. It is great. It is a two-timeline sort of story between a retired legal counselor who's writing a novel to hoping to find closure for one of his most unresolved homicide cases and his unreciprocated love with his superior, this woman he's really lusted after, both of which still haunt him decades later. And it goes back in time to when they were young and working together and these murders happen, and then forward into the future. Into the current day where they are, well, she's the district attorney and he's, as I said, retired and working on his novel, and shit comes up that reopens this case for them, and they both kind of start investigating together whilst deepening their relationship.
Oh.
Sounds really formulaic, but it's hard to describe why this so works, but you are in. It hooks its claws into you, this film, and drags you along. It's 130 minutes, so 8 minutes shorter. The Casino Royale.
No, you have intrigued me though. So is it a love story? It's a thriller, of course. But is it?
There is a love story element to it. Like between them, will they? Won't they? Does it ever come off? And why won't it? Or if it does, how does it?
But for a foreign
film,
that's
far less important than the actual murder thing.
It's high on the list.
There is one incredible one shot in this movie, which takes place during I think it's a soccer game, and it's him pursuing the likely killer through the middle of this stadium and trying to track them down as it just follows in this one shot. That's absolutely incredible. The ending is horrendously positively satisfying. And I mean that not positive way. It's a thriller and things don't end well. But it's like, oh, that film nailed this ending 100%.
The Secret in Their Eyes.
Mm-hmm. And that's based on the fact that one character says, I always know when someone's lying based on looking them in the eye.
Really? Sounds interesting.
4.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd if you needed any more convincing, and it is in the IMDb top 250 films of all time.
All right, I might put that bad boy on the list.
Well worth a watch. They did a remake. Of course they did. A American remake with Julia Roberts as the female district attorney.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah, it's fine. But
not as good as the...
It's like watching Quarantine after you've seen Wreck. It's fine. It's a good film. Had you not seen the original... You go, yeah, it's solid 3.5 stars, but it doesn't pale in comparison. It pales in comparison, to the original.
Really? So if I have not seen either, you would recommend seeing...
Oh, watch the original. Watch the Spanish one.
Okay.
Don't watch the... I can't remember. There was a couple of things that changed in the American one which annoyed me, but that's always going to be the way.
Okay, cool. Nice one. My number three is... unfortunately, I do talk about this a lot, but I just couldn't leave it out. It's Sicario, everyone.
Yeah.
Sicario.
Yep.
Now,
totally get it. That'll earn you a whole bunch of votes. Right? It should have been on my honorable mentions, to be honest, but it's not, so I'm not going to lie about it.
I sing the praises of this all the time, but Denis Villeneuve, all right? And here we have Emily Blunt in the lead as Benicio Del Toro and a few other folks, Josh Brolin, all these sorts of...
Good cast.
Good cast. It is essentially
about... Good director. Very tense. That sequence on the highway.
Dude, the highway!
Yeah.
It's so good. And
the border. The border, actually.
The border crossing, yeah. Where they were just like, you know, there's like cars lined up and there's like some bad guys in some cars and the good guys are like this. And I can see over at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, there's people with guns. What are we going to do? There's a dog barking the whole time. Really great device by the... Mm-hmm. Just to keep
you
on edge. Right?
Yeah.
And even the beginning of the film is like, Emily Blunt plays this CIA kind of girl, opera person.
Agent.
Who at the beginning of the movie goes into raid this place and something really bad happens. And basically she's like, she's told like, you know, this, we think we can catch these guys. We've got to go into Juarez or like this bad part of Mexico where the gangs just run everything. And she says, and you have to volunteer for this. We can't actually assign you to the case because it's so dangerous. She goes, I'm in. Anyway, The movie is tense from, I reckon, it gives you only a few gaps to breathe, and every other time you're just on the edge of your seat, and it's probably one of the best examples of filmmaking craftsmanship, which is like, it's kind of next level. This guy knows film so well, he knows the execution so well, that he makes you feel exactly
he'll go down as one of the great directors.
Oh yeah, he's the bomb. And so I think, and at the end as well, it's such a sort of a bleak ending, because pretty much it shows you, like Benicio Del Toro says, there are no good men here. So you, like, just leave. There are no good men here. You cannot find salvation here. All you can find is degrees of bad. And it's like, wow. And even the sequel, Day of the Soldado, is not as good as this, but it's good. It's not Denis Villeneuve, but it's really good.
No, it's nowhere near as good. And I think it does in some ways...
Diminish?
Yeah, not diminish, not the film, but the message of that film gets a little bit muddied by what happens in Day of the Soldado, because it almost, what's the word?
It's sort of, the characters do, like, you're seeing...
Redemptifies?
Sort of, yes. And that's, and it is, I still think it's
made
good.
That word up.
Yeah. redeems, yeah.
Redeems, that's the word. Thank
but, you. But, like, but the things that happen is particularly a dinner scene where Benicio del Toro comes in, and it is so chilling. It's like, fuck, he did, so it's, he's right. There are no good men. Even the supposed hero of the piece is not a good man. And so, yeah, it's an insanely, insanely good film. If you haven't seen Sicario, you got to go check it out.
100% agree. My number two is a film which I have championed on the show before, but I don't think enough, and one which I don't think enough people have seen. It's from director Karen Kusama. It's from 2015. It's called The Invitation. Hmm. And The Invitation is an insanely tense film, which basically follows Tom Hardley, so the guy Logan Marshall Green from Upgrade.
Yep.
He plays a guy who's accepted an invitation from his ex-wife and her new husband slash partner. I can't remember really if they're still together, new partner. After she went away to this, basically went off to a cult.
Right.
And she's come out of it now with her new partner. And they've invited his new girlfriend, and a bunch of their old friends to come together for this dinner.
Right.
Up in the Hollywood, LA Hills.
Yeah.
And so they all go there, and what really broke them up was the fact that their son died very tragically, and you can watch the film to find out how and why. But, I mean, he's awkward about going anyway because, you know, who wants to go to their ex-partner? Yeah. But it's important because she went away because to this cult, whatever, because she was really mentally unhinged after the death of their son. And so he's trying to support her and kind of help her get back. And
yeah, it's just, yeah, I get it.
Once they get there, though, he starts to suspect this is not what it seems. Mm-hmm. And he starts to worry a lot that maybe she, and more specifically her partner, this new guy in her life, are planning to do bad shit to the guests.
Really?
As some kind of culty thing.
Okay.
But he's coming across as unhinged. He's coming across as in like he's the problem, person's got problems. He's not let go of his son's death. And the film builds and builds through what's going on here, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not long. This film's like 100 minutes, but it's really taut. Like we're inside the house within 10 minutes. We've established the characters within 20, 25, and then shit starts going south in his mind very fast. But is it real or is it not?
And that's the, as the audience, that's you're
the
like...
That's the tension of this movie.
Very cool.
And the film holds till pretty late in the movie to give you a definitive answer one way or the other, which I'm not going to spoil here, even though it is 8 years old, this film. I'm sure I've spoken about it before on the show.
All right.
But if you haven't checked it out, I think, Wayne, you would dig this movie.
Yeah? Okay, cool. Definitely. What's called again?
The Invitation.
The Invitation. Add it to
list, yeah.
Nice one.
So very high on my list because I wanted to champion something I don't often talk about, a bit of like The Secret in Their Eyes.
Brilliant. Nice work. Okay, well, my number two isn't a gem like that. It is very well known and it sneaks right in because it's 2001.
Uh-huh.
I've actually given it to Donnie Darko.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'll
Did
tell you why.
Did not see that coming.
No, I'll tell you
this
why.
Is it divisive?
Yes.
Damn.
It is, and I'll tell you why. I came to this so late. This film. People for years, one of those things where people say, you would love this, you would love this, you would love this. And I'm like, I don't know. And I didn't even really know what was going on, right?
Okay.
So I'm watching the film. Yes, Jake Gyllenhaal again. All right, great. And Maggie, great, you know. First of all, the thing that I immediately liked about the film was all the Tears for Fears. I was like, if they're using like Head Over Heels and stuff while this guy's riding down the street, for some reason I liked it very much.
Everybody.
Yeah. Oh,
is that on there?
No, that's a little later on.
Disappointing.
But by the way, Tears for Fears, amazing duo. This is probably the only example I can think of a film which, first of all, the production, the guy doesn't even like how it came out. Like the director doesn't even, he says, no, I wanted it to go a whole
Richard Kelly.
Way. Yeah.
He who became so weird and out there and perfectionistic that he has basically been shunned from Hollywood.
Did he move to jail?
He did Southland Tales, which was a huge flop, massive flop, and there were all kinds of reported problems. And then afterwards went on to do a Richard Matheson adaptation called The Box with Cameron Diaz and someone, and James Marsden, I think.
No, really?
I don't know if he's made another film after that.
Oh, I don't know about that. But they talked to him about this. But like when you watch the film, only after a lot of discussion can you make sense of it because it doesn't really make sense. And it does have a twist at the end, which will give you enough to actually like the film. But it's one of those movies where I was kind of in the dark the whole time, but it didn't stop me from enjoying it.
Sure.
And I don't think I've actually seen that again ever since. Like, I don't think I've actually come across that where I'm like, I don't know what happened, but it was the shit. Tenet could have been like that if it was slightly less fucking head, if it made slightly more sense.
You know, it's funny that we've probably reached the age now, I'm realizing from your list particularly today, there's, you know, Gone Baby Gone and The Town and now Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
I remember the broad brush strokes of these films. I don't remember the particulars at all.
Yeah.
I could probably watch them again now and it might come back to me as they're going, but I could probably enjoy them again almost as first time watches.
Absolutely. And that's the only probably perk of there being so much content.
Yeah. And because we consume so much for this show.
Exactly.
There's only so much room in anyone's head.
Do you know that I actually, sometimes I rate a movie, a factor in the movie is whether I'm going to remember it in like fucking seriously 10 days time. Right? For real, because like if it was a great movie, I'll remember it. If it was like, oh, this was fine and everything, I'm going to forget it in like T-minus 2 days. So it's like, that's that. But and that's why I think that, and even though this film's like The Rabbit and like it's going to end in 28 days.
Yeah, The Rabbit stuff.
All this stuff. None of this like would actually like, but I can see why people said you would like this film, and I did, and it was purely because of how it felt. So there's there's Donnie Darko, everyone.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Let's just rate a film on how I felt.
It's been a long weekend.
Jesus. Well, yeah, if you knew the Wayne behind the scenes stories, you would understand that comment. All right then, so running through my list before revealing my number one, which I do apologize for because I'm getting on the Wayne bandwagon with it. Number 10, Irreversible. 9, Drive. 8, Searching. 7, Parasite. 6, Ruining the one-word titles. Casino Royale. 5, The Guest. 4, The Departed. Really fucking with these short titles now. My number 3, The Secret in Their Eyes. Number 2, The Invitation. My number 1, back to the one-word title, Wayne. The last great film from director Michael Mann, starring one of your absolute favorites, T to the C, in a villain role, Collateral. There we go.
There you go. Look, let me just give my 10 and then we'll start with yours, okay?
Please.
10 was Limitless, 9, Nightcrawler, 8, Split, 7, Gone Baby Gone, 6, Shutter Island, 5, The Town, 4, Gone Girl, 3, Sicario, 2, Donnie Darko, and yes, number 1, Collateral. Paul, tell me about Collateral, because this is the shit, this film.
Collateral is one of those films which, unlike the other ones I just mentioned before, lives rent-free in my head for how different and how effective that it was. This is Michael Mann, the Michael Mann who made Heat, still firing those same cylinders in terms of the way the film looks.
Absolutely.
I think the script, which I want to give some credit to here because I think it's fantastic, from Stuart Beattie, a bit of a veteran writer there as well, just nails the brief. And the brief is basically this. Jamie Foxx is a cab driver. He's a nice guy. He makes a connection with Will Smith's wife, Yada Pinkett Smith.
Yep. Keep her motherfucking name out of your motherfucking...
Well played, sir.
There you go.
Well played. And then later on, he picks up this guy, Vincent, who is played by an overly aged up Tom Cruise, who's wearing a suit, designer suit, and he's got gray hair, and he's like, you're going to drive me here. And he goes on to murder someone along the way as his contract killer.
Yep.
And as we find out as the film progresses, the last place he's going is to murder Pinkett Smith.
Yada.
And Jamie Foxx realizes the further this goes, the less chance he has of surviving. And eventually this mild-mannered, normal guy, he's going to have to fight back. And that is the film. Meanwhile, Mark Ruffalo is a cop who's on the case. They start to think maybe it's Jamie Foxx's cab that's doing the killing because they work out he's the one that's going to every place. But eventually he realizes what the story is and all this comes together in a great couple of final act sequences. It's so good. It's so tense. It's got great soundtrack as well, including Hands of Time. And yeah, it's one of those first films that was shot on digital around the era of 28 Days Later as well.
Okay.
And it has a really distinctive kind of look. And I just love everything about this movie. It's just, I could watch it again tonight. No, as often is the case when we talk about our number ones on these lists.
Yeah.
It just speaks to me in a way that, and the fact that Tom Cruise is willing finally to play something other than the virtuous hero. I think you could argue this is his best role,
like in terms of what he nailed with
it. So it's generic because it's an action thriller action film, and he'll never be nominated for it. But the fact he went so far out of his normal range and was prepared to, because he had something written in his contract where he can't die.
That's a rumor, man. Look at the word. I thought that he made the movie Oblivion in response to that because he died 1,000 times in Oblivion.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But he also died in Oblivion. So, I don't know.
Not as much as he died in Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, so this is like, so obviously...
But this is years before.
Okay. But here's the thing,
but
right?
He certainly didn't want to play bad guy. He didn't want to tarnish his image. And here he was prepared to do so for the project that
which
he believed in.
Which makes him a legend. Because, like, check this out. There's a scene, right, where he's... You know, these toughs, they rip out his... They steal his briefcase from out of the cab while he's in the house. Comes out. He says, hey, homie, is that my briefcase? These two, like, thugs are like, yeah, motherfucker. What else you got? Pull a gun on him, right? They roll right up on him, and he does this move.
Got bang, bang.
Yeah. He pulls bang, 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 and he takes them both out. Now, that's actually... There are videos online of gun enthusiasts talking about this scene. Because apparently, the way Tom Cruise does it, the way he grabs it down, the way he's like, he pulls and he's like, the gun is right in the middle of his body when he fires and fires again. That is like textbook, holy shit. Someone's practiced for months to do that. And he did do that. He practiced with live ammo to do this role so that he could do...
Of course he did. Tom Cruise,
right? So that and pretty much every other move in this, you can tell that he can just like, you know, it's so fucking good. And even the kills that he does do, like you're almost on the verge of liking him. Because he's such a, like, you know.
No, I think you're on the verge of liking
maybe.
Him. I'm not.
But the thing is, you're
like, very obvious from the moment that Max picks him up that Max is going to die, and so therefore he's not a likable character.
Yeah, I get it. But, like, yeah, look, I mean, I can't say any more than you said. This is fucking the shit. If you haven't seen Collateral, you got to check it out.
You absolutely do. All right, there we are. We are in 100% agreement. I'm glad you didn't chop that one off your list because I would have felt bad that I was cheapening slash taking it.
No.
Rain? Run us through.
Okay.
Run us through your list.
All right. You know what was cool? Swordfish. I love Swordfish.
Oh, God. No, I didn't.
That was fucking great.
Apart from the opening explosion, which was awesome.
I still love it. Running Scared. We talked about this last time, yep. So that's great. Source Code. Jake Gyllenhaal again. Mr. Brooks. I talked about this last time.
Mr. Brooks. Nice.
Kevin Costner movie. Red Dragon. Loved it. Get Out. Loved it. I don't know if The Prestige is a thriller.
Yeah, I thought that would be on your list.
Yeah, but that's the only... And then, yeah, there you go. So those are my honorable mentions. You?
Other than Inception, I'd Road to Perdition.
Fucking what a great fucking film.
Get Out, which is the other sort of horror thriller that could have straddled the list. The Lies of Others, which is a great German film. Old Boy, Nightcrawler, as you mentioned. Identity.
Yeah, you and I don't agree on that one.
You don't like Identity?
Because it's the end of the movie makes the whole thing fucking useless.
Okay,
like
I love
pointless.
Identity. History of Violence, Split, as you mentioned, and Hell or High Water, which I thought was a fantastic film, but maybe arguably too Western.
Sloggy. But it was a good film.
Oh, I loved it.
I did like it, excellent. But and I was surprised that I liked it because it was so sloggy.
That's our list. What about yours? We have every episode of the Countdown Podcast with your feedback on the topic at hand in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with a man who hosts a wonderful show, another Australian show, We Watch the Thing podcast, B-Dizzle, Billy Dunham.
Billy D. Sorry. I don't know why I've never thought of that before. Oh, damn. Hercules.
Billy D. So much better than B-Dizzle, Billy. Number 3, The Departed. Number 2, Sicario. Number 1,
yeah,
Promising Young Woman.
Oh, look, that was a real interesting ass
film,
for sure.
It was very good. Luke Alexander said, I'm barring myself from Nolan films, much as we did.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, Shutter Island. Number 2, Prisoners. Number 1, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. Preferred the Swedish version.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Even though Fincher did the American one.
Yeah, I know. That's betraying your boy.
I'll be honest with you, I only saw the Fincher one. But everyone talked about it.
That surprised me. Jamie Davies said, A Scanner Darkly. Wow, Linklater in rotoscoping. Number 2, We Need to Talk About Kevin. Yeah, that's a good film. Could have been on my list. Number 1, Parasite. David Powell, another patron of the show, and the other co-host of the We Watch the Thing podcast. Another reason to do check them out. Number 3, Mulholland Drive.
Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
Yeah.
You can't handle the truth.
I don't understand. Fuck. I can't. That's aimed at me. I don't understand David Lynch. I will never understand David Lynch. I do not get the fanboy / girling standing about him.
No, me neither. I'm not a fan of Lynch.
So I'm glad you love it, David. But anyway, number 2, Coherence. That is a film which has merit, although I was a bit perplexed by David's love for it. And I won Parasite.
There you go.
Timothy Williams, number 3, The Gift. Love a movie where I can't figure out or guess what the twist is. Joel Edgerton is very unsettling. Number 2, Ex Machina. Being a big Black Mirror fan, this felt like a movie-length episode. Scary ending. And number 1, this is a dark, disturbing film. I went irreversible. He's gone hard candy. Only ever watched it once, but I still remember it well. And if you've seen it, you probably know why.
I know of it and not sure, yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson basically playing isn't he a pedophile?
Oh, God, how tough. Imagine me taking that role as well, Jesus.
Mina Harker, aka Dan, so number 3, The Guest. Thank you for the reminder of that one. Mina, number 2, Stoker. Number 1, again, Promising Young Woman. Nick Orton had number 3, 10 Cloverfield Lane. I think the episode that the review we did, episode 50 of the podcast for.
Damn, good memory, son.
Number 2, Parasite. Number 1, Wind River. There's another Jerry Renner.
Wind River. Woo-hoo-hoo. He's the shit.
Jonas Lander said, patron of the show, said, Old Boy, watching this mystery unfold into, well, what it unfolds to. Number 2, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Either the US or the Norwegian version. Both are good, but honestly, I like the Fincher one better. Number 1, Zodiac. What it lacks in action, it more than makes up for intention.
Zodiac is the bomb.
I watched it once. I remember where it was. I remember who I watched it with.
I can't remember what. The best thing about it is the scene where Jake Gyllenhaal and Rob Downey Jr. are drinking like girly drinks. It's really good, but that's it. That's all I can remember.
Chris Yinney, another patron to the show. Thank you, Chris, for your support. Number 3. He's going to rule out Memento as being Last Millennium. Fair enough. That's 2000.
Tis.
Number 3, Nightcrawler. There you go, Wayne. Number 2, Parasite again. I think Parasite, the one that gets mentioned a lot.
Big time.
And number 1, The Gift. Another vote for The Gift. There you very, are, very nice. Matt Evans had The Hateful Eight. That's interesting. Different.
Do you really, you reckon?
Number 2, Nightcrawler. Number 1, Zodiac as well.
Sure.
And lastly, no, second to last, Ben Burham said Memories of Murder, number 3, The Lighthouse, number 2, and Old Boy, number 1. And then, mate, to us, Smiley Samani said, number 3, Midnight Special, number 2, Eastern Promise, and number 1, Paprika, which is a film I've never
seen. Nor have I. There you go.
There we go. Thank you very much to everyone who got back to us. We really appreciate you taking the time to do so. It's a late call out for the list this week. I am sorry, and hopefully we'll get out there more next week. Speaking of next week, Wayne, what is 441? This was your brainchild, this particular topic?
Yes, we thought it would be interesting. Remember, kids, when you were young and there was TV instead of online streaming. Some of you.
Instead of being able to watch whatever you wanted to watch, whenever the fuck you wanted to watch it.
Exactly. There were Saturday morning cartoons. I would actually wake up early to catch these motherfuckers. And I was thinking, let's do a list of our favorite ones of those. Because that'll be some fun shit.
Cartoons from our youth. I think if we're being literal, we're not being literal. It's sort of saying, you know, cartoons that we watch.
It is. But like for me, it's like, yeah, I have specific ones that I know are Saturday morning ones.
Yeah,
but if it's a cartoon one, that's fine too.
And we're really excited about this one because we've done nothing like this at all to this point in time, which is incredible, 440 episodes into the show. So we hope you're going to get on board for that one and join us for a lot of fun and reminiscing about the days of yore, although your days of yore might be only be 5 or 6 years ago. If you're a younger listener to the show, they all count. So do get involved there. And you can do so via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at thecountdown, not Twitter, sorry, X. Don't worry about that one. It's fucking shit. See this week's review for my rant about that. TheCountdownPodcast.com for our website and links to merch stores and Patreon. Get involved there for the extra stuff that's going up. There's going to be another one going up in next week there, plus a recent episode where Wayne's talking about his very, very interesting dating life.
Good Lord, it was just scary. And people have come back to me going, dude, she's crazy.
Yeah.
So
no arguments.
Weigh in.
There from me. And of course, the Facebook list community, the only place you can vote each week on the list and get involved with your feedback on the topic at hand. Thank you so much for joining us again today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard. We'll catch you next time. See ya.